We gotta talk about Jamie. We gotta talk about Arya today. And we have a lot of owns from readers, if I am not mistaken. You sent a giant file over.
We thank all of you for joining us this week. It's November.
Speaking of somebody who needs drugs at the end of this chapter,
yeah.
Jamie is in desperate need of them.
Drugs, more like antiseptic, man.
And some pizza.
This was this was like probably the first chapter that I'm just taking this away from Eric, I'm sorry. But then, the first chapter of this entire series that I can honestly remember. Like the White Walker stuff kind of was crazy, but you've been expecting it for so long. And this just like no expectation that this was going to happen to Jamie whatsoever. And this is like, this is such a major crazy George R. R. Martin moment. It's kind of the first big one after Ned gets his head chopped off. It's just like, holy shit.
It's open-ended as well.
It is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Holy shit went down.
That's the important thing because the chapter ends as the sword comes down. But I looked like the next Jamie chapter is 10 chapters from now.
Yeah.
It's like over 100 pages away.
Yeah, no kidding. This is one of those moments where you're like, what? And you like flip to the next one. Yep. You just like find the next Jamie chapter.
Going to mention that. Yes. I have like, I realized when I was a kid that I have a terrible like suspense. Like I can't handle it. So I flip ahead when I have a book. But the Jamie chapter is like over 100 pages from now. And you just, it doesn't say what happened, just that he screamed. And so you have this idea that Jamie's still gonna live, but you have no idea what just happened. In the show, they can't have that. It's just like you see what happens, but it's still like it's open ended, and you see somebody who you just never expect them to do this to somebody who is a member of one of the most powerful families.
I didn't see this coming in this chapter at all, certainly, because I realized that we're not too far into a Storm of Swords, not egregiously far into it.
Right.
You guys were saying it was kind of unexpected that it happened. I feel like that's pretty much the story for this entire chapter. I did not expect the archers. I did not expect what happened to Ser Cleos, rest in peace. I did not expect the fight that took place to take place in this chapter and in this way. And of course, everything else.
There were several fights.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. It was good. It was action packed.
This is the chapter where the Jamie and Brienne fight finally happens. And by fight, I mean fights, plural. They continue to go at it. You know how in the show the Brienne and like Hound fight like lasts forever, and you just want it to end, and it's like brutal because there's like no music and they're just punching each other in the face and bleeding and missing body parts. That's like how it worked in this book, in this chapter. I felt between Brienne and Jamie, like they're tripping over rocks, they're spraining their ankles, they're getting their faces kicked in, and then getting up and still jabbing at each other with their weapons. And it's really brutal, but like it's really well written to the point where you're just like, wow, he really wants to be free of her. She really is torn because she can't quite kill him. You know, and it's just their motivations, the characters, like what's going on inside their heads. You can only imagine what's going on inside Brienne's, but what's going on in Jamie's head is just pure popcorn. It's pure gold.
I feel like it really began with just telling us once more, the war is big, the war is dismal, and so many places that were not even fruitful before, but just normal and alive are not any longer. Maidenpool, which we learned in this chapter, where it said that Florian the Fool had first glimpsed Jonquil bathing with her sisters, I'm guessing was kind of a beautiful sight during someone's journey across Westeros. And it is literally plugged up by rotting corpses, enough human corpses to make a body of water in the natural world a different color and a different consistency. And that's what's happening right now, and that's what they're riding by.
Gross.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just going to say it's a missed opportunity. I can't recall Jamie using one of the corpses as like a shield.
It's like people Kool-Aid. It's like people tea.
Oh, and then no, you're right. Like they just happen on this. I mean, when you get to this area, I imagine it in my mind's eye as being like this, just this middle of the country, like they're on their way to King's Landing or wherever. But just like wetlands and plains, and it's the same place that Arya basically is. And you have to take care, because if you make a noise or if you stumble on a building that looks abandoned, but it's not abandoned, you're immediately faced with trouble from all sides.
That's sort of the unique thing about these two chapters, is that they do parallel each other in a way, in that both of them are on the road trying to get home to the people that they care about the most, and yet they're both going through these lands that are completely devastated by the war. And in these other chapters, a lot of times we're spending time with characters who are safe, right? If we look at those that we spend time with in King's Landing, maybe danger is, you know, presents itself to them in different manners. But when you're reading through a point of view chapter from Jaime or from Arya, they're actually seeing the results of what's taken place. They're actually seeing how the common folk are dealing with the battles that we've just heard about, you know, in other chapters.
Yeah, they're not holed up in some keep somewhere. Like, mm-hmm. you know, Tyrion is, Catelyn is, you know, I guess Sam is in the road, is on the road. Arya is on the road. And Jaime and Brienne are on the road.
We get some really solid backstory again, just sort of inner monologue of Jaime when he makes the I want to say foreshadowing joke, even though that's not a real phrase, but he's like, care for a bath, Brienne? And it's like, I know about
that. I was baths. Kind of expecting it to be this chapter, yeah, where they kind of in the bath, but I realize it's spread out a little bit. But I mean, considering we got both the fight and the cutting off of Jaime's arm like in this chapter, I'm surprised that they happen so close to each other. But I think it's to set the tone of like, who are these guys that Jaime's with and who are they really truly serving? It's clearly setting things up for the rest of the book.
I liked two particular things that go through Jaime's head during this chapter. One is when he's like the way that the fight turns, when he first starts fighting Brienne. And he's like, ugh, she's so ugly. And man, she might have a little bit of an advantage since I have my hands tied together and I have to use this super light sword as a great sword, but whatever. She's a woman. So, and then like, as it goes on, every paragraph is a little bit less confident until the end. He's like, she's not getting tired.
She's stronger than I am. Damn it.
Oh my God. Only the mountain and like three other people in the realm are stronger than me. What is wrong with this?
Yeah.
Woman? Which I love. Okay. I love that whole evolution. Like that. And you see it in real time, his confidence like chipping away until he's like, uh-oh.
Great
trouble.
John Umber, Arthur Kane.
Two Clegane's, maybe, but then like also a woman, like what the? And then my other favorite thing about Jaime's mind in this chapter is when he talks about the fact that if he were to encounter Arya and Sansa, he would totally take them back to Riverrun because he thinks it would be funny. Like he's like, the idea of me keeping my word is way more amusing than the idea of doing what everybody expects me to do, which is to totally break my word.
Whatever,
I think
blows
it'd be
your
hilarious.
Up,
yeah. It's like, I think it would tickle me to take those girls back. Like, I love that. It's just like pure Jaime arrogance.
And backstory there too. I mean, when he's recalling specifically those moments when he was with Cersei and he got caught by his mom. His mom was, informed on what he had been doing. She was pretty horrified by it. And then, you know, he just mentions not more than a few sentences later that not too long after his mother finding out about what happened between Cersei and Jaime, that Tyrion came along and ended up killing her. So,
right.
There is a lot, Zach, to your point about this inner monologue. Mm-hmm. And even before that, he has a moment where, you know, he's looking around, seeing everything that's going on or that has taken place around him. And he notes that all these burned lands remind him too much of Eris. Mm-hmm. So Jaime, he pivots, right, as we move forward in the story. But yet these moments, you start to think that there's something about him that could potentially be redeemable if, you know, he's looking around, he's seeing all the devastation and destruction, and yet he compares it to a king who he had no remorse for whatsoever and was easily able to murder because of what he did or what he had the potential to do. And so, Kate, you brought up the fact that he jokes about returning Sansa because, hey, that's not what anybody would expect me to have done. But at the same time, he still has moments of being a douchebag. And so that's why you can't completely side with him at this point.
It's a process.
It is a process. He's basically talking in his inner monologue about how ugly Brienne is. Like, she loses two teeth or something, and he's like, yeah, it does not improve how she looks, but she's still kicking my ass. And it's like, it's really sad. Like, he comes up with ways to kind of, he's still trying to the very bitter end to like outword her and say what he thinks is on her mind, like all that stuff about keeping her oath. But in the meantime, he's also missing his sister. And he, you know, there's a bit about that. And you're shown just how he acts and how he thinks at the same time. And the two items are in contrast with each other, kind of. But they're also kind of the same because he's just, hey, he's just a complex character, right? Who killed the king, but it was the right thing to do. And seeing him trying to escape from captivity, on which he was probably rightfully imprisoned, is just another step along that same journey of us coming to like Jaime. And I think by the end of this, you know, once he has his injury, he's only going to become more grounded and more endearing to the reader.
Yeah, no question.
And at this point, you have like 2,000 or 3,000 pages that separate you from the act where he pushed Bran out the window. So, I mean, same with the TV show, right? It airs years apart. It's tough to sometimes remember that he has done some really bad things. And because we don't get a Brienne chapter, you know, we don't see her point of view yet. I don't know if we ever do. You kind of can't help but cheer for him because he's dealing with this situation so humorously. But he pushed Bran out the window, you know, a couple books back. And I think that's an important thing to remember.
Well, he's definitely being humbled, and certainly in this chapter, you know, they're riding past the wall, and we're dealing with him thinking about Cersei, we're dealing with him insulting Brienne, and the whole wench debacle is still going, and he's having a good laugh with it. But no one expected Bowman to rise and begin shooting at them. There were arrows flying. Jaime was able to duck and sort of get out of the way because he's good at stuff. You know, like he's been in actual battle before. This is sort of second nature to him. And we learn in the chapter that this is really his preferred state of being, this, you know, gray area, basically 50-50 between life and death, maybe more of 60-40 in his favor, even when he's chained up. But Brienne is hit with an arrow in the back. She's hit with an arrow in the leg. And in that moment, Jaime, when he sees her, he notices, and George, you know, permitted it to be written in the book. So it's important that she didn't even flinch necessarily and didn't even notice it. Like, she starts charging and yelling Tarth, really, really getting into it.
She does power squats. That's why.
She does kettlebells every morning. It's part of her ritual.
Yeah, exactly.
And she's vastly prepared for this. But Jaime makes the decision, instead of, you know, trying to ride away from these people, even after he sees his cousin get hit with arrows and then fall off of his horse and his foot is still in the stirrup and he's getting dragged. And luckily, his head is breaking his fall.
Luckily.
But Jaime charges toward the arrowmen, and they, I guess, don't realize that he's chained up without a weapon, and they bolt because they're scared cravens.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And then after that, they're able to actually find Sir Cleos Frey, who is indeed... The way that George puts it is that his head was sort of mashed in, and you could like see the bones and the skull were moving around. He was dead.
How you fall has everything to do with whether or not you get back up again. Like, yeah, he was shot with an arrow in the chest. That may have like punctured along.
No.
A little
I was
longer.
Under the impression that the horse was dragging him, and he kept hitting his head on the ground.
Yeah, he was fine, I think. Like, his horse got spooked or something, and was, yeah, he his horse was fucking him up.
But like, you have to, I guess you have to be a little bit more deft with your horse, right? You have to jump off cleanly, or
stay on.
If you're hit with arrows, stay on, you know, kind of thing. Like, I think it was probably a skill that Cleos lacked to be able to, like,
I'm sure the arrows had their impact as well.
Yeah.
And did some damage to him. But I think ultimately the state that he's in when they find him is because his horse dragged him along, and his remains are a result of that. So I like the moment when Jaime was charging, you know, to your point, Zach, it showed a lot about his abilities as an actual person of war, right? To know that he was able to charge, because bowmen generally, or archers generally, I mean, he basically called them pussies. He's like, if you charge at them, they're going to run like little bitches, because...
Well, they have a ranged weapon, which
they don't have anything
no,
to fight with.
They have a ranged weapon, which is
the
no
New York
good
comes out of Micah.
In a melee fight. It makes
sense. Right, no, you're
sense.
Right, Eric.
It makes
absolutely
sense. Like, Jaime is using his real world knowledge to have a tactical, to come up with a tactical strategy. He's in chains, and you know, he's not able to perform fully as he would be normally, but he's still devising.
Well, Brienne sure is able to.
Succeeds. That basically drives off the people. Like, if they hadn't hung around and, you know, made such a clatter, Which is, I read it like that.
Like Santa Claus?
Yes. Reading. Yeah, if they hadn't arose such a clatter, they would have, you know, been saved by Jaime's daring charge. So that's just something to keep in of mind, course. That Jaime is very tactically sound. He's very on.
This presents the opportunity. These archers really, because of what ends up happening to Cleos Frey,
right.
You know, this is the moment that Jaime has been waiting for, and he tries to his credit, he really does try to get Brienne to take, you know, the rope off his hands and to let him fight beside her, you know, should anything else come up in the future. And she just doesn't have anything of it. And she brings up yet again that Jaime's words are worth nothing because he swore an oath to Aerys and he broke it. And I think Jaime just gets pissed off that everything keeps coming back to Aerys.
Yeah.
And so he's able to take the sword from the hilt of Cleos, and they start the battle that woke most of the area that they were fighting in.
You know, the cool thing is, though, the second that Brienne and him are on equal footing as being both captives, he spends every one of his words trying to get her, I guess, sentence reduced. You know, he tries to get her off easy. He tries to even explain to her what he's doing, but he's, you know, tells the men that she has value and that they would do best not to rape her, as they're clearly going to do. Like, he spends every minute not after, like, he's just like, I'm a Lannister. They know who he is. So he's just like, he feels safe, but he's still taking the time to save Brienne, basically save her dignity, which he is now kind of, he's come around in this chapter. I think realizing that she was stronger than him was clearly part of it, but he's come around and is now defending her honor. And I think that if he wasn't completely able to be truthful about, you know, going quietly to King's Landing or whatever it was with Brienne before, if they ever break free again, I think they're pretty much going to be able to trust one another, because he's essentially spending all his energy to save her life now.
This situation sucks. I feel like it could have been avoided if they should have realized the threat of the archers riding off. It's just a bad idea. You know, she got onto him earlier in the chapter for singing. So I think getting shot at and the yelling and the battle cries and the picking over of Cleos' body, like from that moment, they should have dropped the bullshit and they should have been like, all right, let's hide or let's get the hell out of here just in case. But they didn't, and they fought. And at the end of their fight, you know, they're greeted by an entire group of men surrounding them in the tree line, like just laughing.
Men, I mean, they're basically the scum of the earth.
The worst people there are.
Even Dothraki are here.
The fattest Dothraki.
The people that we do not like, the brave companions, a.k.a. the bloody mummers, essentially step forward out of the brush. And we've got our favorite people, Rorge and Biter,
Rouge.
And Erswick.
My name is Rouge.
The cave. And they immediately, this sucks.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of like one of those situations where you're hanging out with your friends and you're teasing your little brother, and then your friends start teasing your little brother, and you're like, hey, no, you don't get to tease my little brother.
You don't have the right.
Yeah. I earned this right. You don't get to do that. Except, you know, instead of teasing your little brother, they're threatening.
That's a great analogy. I like that a lot.
Jaime starts to, he starts to get nervous here though, because he realizes that he doesn't have the bargaining power that he once had, because, you know, he has a conversation with, Erswick, and he tries to the best of his ability to negotiate, to put himself in a better position. He even plays the Reigns of Castamere card, right? And
that's a good card.
That goes nowhere. And it still, at the end of the day, comes back to the same thing that Brienne threw in his face earlier on in the chapter, which is that he's an oath breaker. And, you know, this one moment in his life where we find out later he actually did something that was honorable and saved a lot of people's lives, this one misunderstood moment continuously comes back to bite him in the ass. And he says it always comes back to Aerys, and that's why they don't trust him. And so now he's taken before Vargo Hoat, who's this slobbering, disgusting human being who is now in charge, or in part charge of Harrenhal.
Lord Hote.
You know, one of the more disturbing things I think about this chapter is, you know, we've always known sort of the Northmen and the Starks to be these honorable people, and yet here you have this group of bloody mummers who have sworn allegiance to Roose Bolton.
Yeah.
And that doesn't bode well, at least from a... You wouldn't want to have these people fighting on your behalf, I don't think.
I still feel a little bit safe, though. I feel like the foreshadowing to them being horrible people that are possibly oathbreakers and siding with the Lannisters isn't there quite yet, because these guys don't even listen to Brienne's commands when she's basically quoting the mother of their king in the north that they're serving.
The king in the north.
They're ignoring her as well. So it's not like they're just so adamant to be honorable and follow their charge and take care of Jaime. It's not like they're saying no to his offers just because they're so into the people that they serve now. They're just horrible people. So I feel like if this would have been even a group of Boltons, we would have had more of a problem with the Northmen being terrible. But since it is the Brave Companions, and since we've already learned so much through Arya's point of view, that they're just really horrible, shitty people and will do anything no matter what, and that they rape and pillage the countryside anyway, I feel like it's a little less of a blow to the North than it could have been.
I just want to say that what Micah was talking about, too, about that one moment where Jaime broke his oath as being forever, like, dooming him, I just hope that the same... proper mistrust is paid upon Walder Frey after he infringes upon the rule of hospitality, right? The unspoken rule of hospitality. Yeah, we know that's going to happen later in this book, but I just want to see Frey crumble for the same reasons that Jaime is, like, he's held accountable, not just with a bad name, but where he can't even get a word in edgewise because of something that he did. And I just want to see that same thing paid to Lord Walder Frey.
Well, speaking of Walder Frey, when they find Kleos later on and these brave companions go to basically disrobe him and take him of everything that he has remaining on his body, Jaime points out the fact that the arrows that had been shot at him went both through Lyon and Towers alike.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering if that is alluding to anything down the line.
Be nice.
And so this chapter wraps up with Jaime and Vargo Hote, and, you know, a bit different from the show, because we know that they invented this character called Locke, right?
Yep.
Yes. Yeah, who's going to end up being Bolton's number one man, right?
He basically takes on the role of Vargo. But Vargo is much more sinister, in my opinion. He's as I mentioned earlier, sort of this slobbering, disgusting
excuse
for a human being.
He has a lisp.
He does. But more so, I think he just slobbers. And so, you know, he's a bit like a feral dog. And Jaime tries again to negotiate a bit here with Vargo. But Vargo is having none of it. And he specifically says that he wants to give Tywin Lannister a bit of a
message.
A message, yeah.
Yeah. Method. Here's the Jaime says, "He will pay well for me, you know it," meaning his father. And Vargas, "Oh, yes, half the gold in Catherly Rock I shall have. But first, I must send him a message."
Sunlight ran silver along the edge of the Arrak as it came shivering down, almost too fast to see. And Jaime screamed. What a way to leave us. Thanks.
I love that what happens just before that, where it says he was a Lannister of Casterly Rock, Lord Commander of Kingsguard. No sellsword would make him scream, but then he screams. That's what makes it terrifying.
Some crazy shit goes down.
Yep.
Yeah. He's like determined specifically not to scream, and then he screams. Because I think it's a natural response. I think it's pretty fair to scream, to have that reaction to getting your unknown object cut off. I can't believe George made people wait 10 chapters. That man's sadistic. Like, it's the worst.
We get to visit the place where they, I believe, where they just were, because we got to see a little bit of the large Dothraki man, like, on top of the statue picking the eyes clean.
Yeah. And apparently they took the breasts as well, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, why not? And in Arya's chapter, which we're moving to now, I felt like it was very unique and really allowed the travel and the passage of time to kind of flow freely. And I really enjoyed it because we got to see so much in one chapter versus there being lots of conversation in one place and then, you know, looking forward to the next thing. this was, it wasn't the same as Lem and Angai and Tom talking to her and then going to the inn and having their thing there. Like, they went to a lot of places, one of them being where the Brave Companions had slaughtered people and made shit happen. So it was cool the way it flowed. And the whole time we just have this overarching concern of how do we find the, I don't know, just almost monolithic Lord Beric Dondarrion and Thoros of Myr. I feel like they're so much cooler in the books so far, rather than just kind of just being around as they are in the show. Like, they're really, really built up, and we still, at the end of this chapter, have not met them yet.
Yeah, they really have a good off-screen persona, or off you know, where you off-page. Don't see them, but you learn a lot about them off-stage. Yeah, persona off. I mean, Beric alone, just the amount of times that he's been killed by the amount of people, or all the accounts of Beric's death, but then Lem, who knows he's alive, is just like, no, you know, they hanged him, but it wasn't like he was totally still alive after that. Like, they didn't hang him all the way. And then, yeah, he was shot in the eye with an arrow, but, you know, that's just his eye. Yeah. Like, people survive that all the time. It's like, we know what's really happening as a result of that really cool scene. Yeah. Was it Kissed by Fire was the episode? Where they finally meet him in the show, but it's really cool to not know what's going on, and then to still see like Arya sees them talking with that woman as well, and it's just all very ominous.
Who may have been mentioned not more than a few chapters previously.
Oh yeah.
But before we get there, I liked what you were saying, Zach, about the. The flowing nature of this chapter, because you also get a lot of backstory. You know, there's the back and forth, right, between Tom and Lem and Angai. They're talking about Brendan Tully and the song that was created about him, basically about how he couldn't get it up.
The floppy fish? Was it called the floppy fish, or was that just a major
No, they
theme?
Called it the floppy
Tom's
fish.
Tom's like, I only sang it once, all right?
And he's like, a man who doesn't like music can't be trusted.
Like, he didn't have a problem with music. He just didn't like you for singing about his floppy wiener.
Okay, I thought we were talking about trout this whole time.
No way.
It's just a nice change to go from the Bloody Mummers to this group of
happy companions.
Yeah, they're fun.
They're a little
no
bit...
banners, no manners.
But they're not as rude as the other guys. I wanted to say I'm a big fan of hearing everything that there is to hear about
about the goddamn children of the forest.
Yes, the goddamn children of the forest. Yes,
finally,
you knew it. Okay, so this place where they spend the night, this place called High Heart, where there's all these stumps, which is just sad, and it's apparently this place that was sacred to the children of the forest, and there's like this magic there, and Arya feels like this little prickling in the back of her neck when she goes there, even though it's like daytime. I really want to know more about it. It's just such a cool place for them to show up, right? I mean, you're going through these burned inns, through all these other, you know, woods, but they get to this place that has historical significance, but it's just a bunch of trees that's no longer there, and the magic is kind of still there, rumored right. to still be there.
I felt it. The hair on the back of my neck stood up.
I felt it, yeah.
I felt it.
And then in came a tiny little woman, a foot shorter than Arya and older than old Nan.
With hair all the way down to her feet.
All stooped and wrinkled and leaning on a gnarled black cane. Her white hair was so long it came almost to the ground. So, yeah. And I think I said Catelyn earlier. I think she's actually mentioned in the Tyrion chapter, right? When... towards the end when they're talking about the Westerling lineage.
Oh, maybe. I'm thinking, like, I'm not connecting it to the Magi. Like, I'm thinking, like, is this a remnant of the children of the fort? Like, is this, like, somebody who's, like, I imagine it like a Lorax, basically. Mm-hmm. It's like, I speak for the trees that
yeah,
are no longer here.
Makes sense.
That's interesting, though, because when you classify them as being children of the forest, but are they in fact really children?
I think it's stated that, like, in, was it Clash of Kings, that the children of the forest kind of, like, looked like children to, like, the first men, because they were, like, impish, or, like, I always imagine pygmies from, like, The Mummy Returns. That's what I always imagine.
Like little Jigglypuffs?
The second movie, really nice. No, they're not, like, Jigglypuffs
thing
at all.
Puts you to sleep.
They could be. We see one of the children in the show.
Like
we
the do. Kokiri, right?
Well,
Zach?
Sort of like the Kokiri, yes.
Them. Yeah. I just imagine waiting them, like, the pygmies. Where they're, like, they are, I don't want to say impish. They kind of look monkeyish, but they're not necessarily actually kids. Clearly, like, if they live for thousands of years, they're not kids unless they have like eternal youth. But yeah, so like
Skull Kid.
I imagine that this woman who's like not, it's not said that she's like a dwarf, but she is like a smaller old person. So it's like she's shorter than Arya.
Well, old people tend to be
diminutive.
Shorter.
Yeah, I get it. But still, like, you just, it makes you question whether or not there's something supernatural going on with this woman. And that's not just because of her red eyes.
I kind of feel bad because I just thought maybe she's been alive long enough to just know more than everyone else and that she could just kind of be a normal person that is learned in things and like Anne Guy and like the guys are saying. And also, let me just say, anyone who's listening, read this chapter because it's so hard for us to visit all of the dialogue, and all of the dialogue is brilliant. The wordplay between these people are some of the more, just, I said happy before, but some of the more happy exchanges in the face of what's going on. Like they're so free of anxiety compared to the people that we read through a lot of the times. I mean, like coming off of the chapters that we had last week, especially, and it's a really nice breath of fresh air in a lot of ways. But yeah, they're on top of High Heart and we know that they're defended. We realize that it's a place where it's kind of like a weather top. Like if people sleep here, you can definitely see people coming from the mm-hmm. distance because you know where you are. So when Arya is asleep at night and the storm wakes her and blows the coverlet off of her and she kind of has to chase it into the bushes, it says that she hears voices. And for a second mm-hmm. I was like, oh no, it is haunted. But the voices she heard was this sort of like campfire ceremony with this old mysterious lady that would tell them things and did tell them things in exchange for, I guess, services or in this case, song. And her dream that she recollected, man, that was some, I don't want to say House of the
Shit,
yeah, powerful ship. It's like kind of like House of the Undying sort of like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's just, it really strummed a chord.
It's that level of relevance though. It's totally like House of the Undying level of relevance. You know, from just what you can infer from what mm-hmm. she says.
So, but before we get into exactly what she said though, the Tyrion chapter and sort of where I was making the comparison to what was mentioned, it says, a frightening old crone supposed to be a priestess, Magi, they called her. No one could pronounce her real name. Half of Lannisport used to go to her for cures and love potions and the like. She's long dead, to be sure.
To be sure. So
to be sure.
Of course.
There's someone who, you know, is her doppelganger that's walking around on High Heart, this evening, and she's meeting with the Brotherhood Without Banners, and, she does have some very, very interesting things to
what
say.
What a cool group of guys that this is who they're meeting, right? It's just like traveling, rolling with Arya Stark and Robert's Bastard.
I dreamt I saw a shadow with a burning heart butchering a golden stag.
Aye.
Well, we already know what that is,
sort
right?
A shadow?
I wonder.
Poor Renly. I dreamt of a man without a face, waiting on a bridge that swayed and swung. On his shoulder perched a drowned crow with seaweed hanging from his wings.
What did you guys think of this one? This one was the most vague to me.
Man without a face, a bridge that swayed and swung. I'm thinking, I mean, a man without a face, that could mean a lot of things.
Don't mm-hmm. they? Oh, yeah, it could be like, because there is a faceless assassin, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like it's Robb Stark because they cut his head off.
Mm-hmm. Faceless is different from headless.
Yeah.
Faceless. I'd like to say easy answer that it has something to do with the Faceless Assassins and maybe even like a Bravosian storyline. And like maybe this is something that is much further on. On his shoulder perched a drowned crow with a seaweed hanging from his wing. So maybe.
Yeah, like who's a drowned crow?
The drowning thing says like Ironborn, but crow says Night's Watch. So mm-hmm. it's like, I don't think the Greyjoys are fighting.
But does crow mean yet? Night's Watch? Because Darkwing's Dark Words is kind of a universal thing. And the Three-Eyed Raven is kind of a its own thing. It doesn't, you know, it's just, I don't know. It's so, I bet you guys know and you're just like, ha 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 ha. I don't know. Yeah, a lot of you guys are listening are like, ha 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 ha.
Like, we know the first one is Melisandre's creature.
Right.
And right. killing Renly. So like, but because that part of the dream is real, you can totally set a lot in store by what else she sees. You're just like, okay, this is going to come into play if it hasn't already.
It is vague. I agree with Kate, and I don't even know, knowing what I know, that I could put a finger on it definitively. I mean, I have some thoughts about parts of it, but I don't know that I could get it 100% right.
Yeah, same here. I'm not. There was something someone said on Twitter earlier this week. They're like, Kate, I love how the Sullied always like to mislead the Unsullied on the show, and I'm like, I either have a bad memory or I'm like genuinely, I'm not trying to mislead you ever. That's all Micah. Micah does that.
Right.
Shit.
No, that's Micah. Does that enough totally for all of us. I dreamt of a roaring river and a woman that was a fish.
Mm-hmm.
Dead she drifted, with red tears on her cheeks. But when her eyes did open, oh, I woke from terror.
Ariel, Little Mermaid.
Obviously.
Mm, definitely.
That's a sullied one.
That is a very sullied.
And she drifted with red tears on her cheeks.
You'll get there. You'll get there.
Well, the Fisher House Tully, we know of only one woman who's in House Tully at this point. She's like the only woman in all of Riverrun. You know, it could be describing the aftermath of the Red Wedding when she's got red tears on her cheeks, like is mm-hmm. like from the blood.
Red Wedding foreshadowing.
Mm-hmm. This middle one bothers me. Like the middle one, I don't have any. Like Drowned Crow, I'm like, again, Ironborn yeah. versus the yeah. Night's Watch. When is that ever going to happen?
Maybe Theon takes the black. I mean, he has, really, that's where he should.
He's like, no other option. I wonder what the state of stem cell research is in the
I would 70s. Say it's low. Although Maester Balabar is working on the mountain, so we'll see.
Oh, that's true.
All this I dreamt and more. Do you have gifts for me to pay for my dreams? Which I love.
She knows money.
She knows what her shit's worth.
Exactly.
She's got a value on it.
This is the first thing, though, that connects, for me anyway, in the books, that connects the Children of the Forest to the green site. Because she has had this dream at this place, which is this old Children of the Forest place. And she has these green dreams here, or like this foreshadowing dream. Like, considering that they're connected in the books, and it's like supposed to be the source of all the powers, like where these Children of the Forest are, I think it was really important to mention that in the books, this is like the first time I've ever seen those two connected.
Well, also, she's really good at doing live future tellings. Lem is like, what good are dreams? He's basically saying, I don't know if I have any gifts for you because you're just talking about dreams. He's like, I had a dream myself last night. I was kissing this tavern wench I used to know. Are you going to pay me for that old woman? And she's like, the wench is dead.
Let's put you in your place.
Old Tom. Tom Seven Sons. Just working the countryside one day at a time.
Yeah, and then they show up at Lady Smallwood's house, and I mean, we can get into Owns later, but I'll go ahead and I don't mind telling you, my own for this chapter goes to Lady Smallwood.
Yeah,
because she's pretty cool.
She's like just a straight up nice ass person. She could be a total weirdo or like playing the game politically. She doesn't try to find out who Arya is. She's like, I know that you're highborn, and that's probably really bad news for you. So you can wear my kids' clothes because I really miss my kids. Like, how sweet. Thank you. Thank you for being like the most reasonably kind person that Arya will probably ever meet for the rest of her life.
Aww. Lady Smallwood was nice. You know, she's asking Arya what kind of hobbies she liked. And Arya is just, I love Arya Stark right now. She's like, oh, needlework. She's like, oh, you really like needlework? She's like, is it restful? She's like, well not the way I do it.
Not the way I do it.
It's funny that you say that, though, Kate, because later on, towards the very end of the chapter, Arya and Gendry had just been fighting, and Harwin says, Arya did start it, I have no doubt. She was much the same at Winterfell, and the next person who speaks is Lady Smallwood. So I wonder if she does know who Arya really is.
Yeah, she might have found it out. She when she's first getting her dressed, like scrubbing her for the first time, she's just like, you're just highborn, and that's not great for you. Sorry about that. But it doesn't seem like this is the kind of information that she's going to use against anybody. The other reason I like Lady Smallwood is even though she's very kind and she's like this generous person, there's obvious like a sexual history between her and Tom Seven Streams. and he's like, she like gives him shit about singing some song. He's like, I've sung it before for somebody in this room and she didn't have much of a problem
she
with
liked it.
You know what I'm saying? And she's like, whatever. Like, I love that she's this like highborn woman who's being generous and letting these ruffians use her keep to stay safe. And she's like, yeah, whatever. We fucked. It doesn't actually matter. Just like, can you please focus for 5 seconds?
She's like, I got TNCT on the ready. So
yeah, exactly. I like it. I like she can keep up with these guys.
But what prefaced the fight with Arya and Gendry? Because obviously they're all in this hall together after she's been bathed and sort of clothed in what ladies would actually wear. They start talking about the Kingslayer and about how a bunch of Northmen had come to the walls of her hall and sort of demanded, do you have Jaime in there? And she's like, yeah, I've got him naked in my bed. And he's way too exhausted to come downstairs.
So I wore him out. So
the Kingslayer is busy.
She says that they didn't like that answer, so they just like shot at him until they ran away. She's kind of a badass. She's like in this book for 5.5 seconds, but I love her. She's excellent.
What's interesting about that, though, is, of course, that Arya finds out that they're Karstark men who are looking for Jaime. And we know that, despite what she may think, that they were Rob's sworn bannerman. We know better than that from what just happened a few chapters ago. Mm-hmm. They were out looking for Jaime for
Rickard Karstark's maiden and marry up, essentially. That was the prize. They're all on a hunt.
I assume those men may have left before Rickard Karstark got executed.
But this is where they start talking about how Jaime actually got free. And this is when Arya's ears perk up, because the rumor is that Lady Catelyn set Jaime free, and everyone there is just like, no way. Tom breaks a string, mm-hmm. and strings are hard to find, all right, when you're traveling the countryside. Mm-hmm. And that's when he tells Arya to leave. So I'm wondering if, Harwin tells Arya to leave, and I'm wondering if maybe this is the moment where Lady Smallwood kind of put two and two together, and when she was out at the smithy with Gendry, like maybe they were like, yeah, well, she probably shouldn't sit here because that's her mom. And so that might be why they were okay with talking about it once she returned.
This is the chapter where I start shipping Arya and Gendry super hard, because because
they were almost boning down.
Because they were like, I mean, she is 10 years old. She's 10. Like, where they're not boning down. But it is this like super cute, like, we're still these kids and we're going to do some wrestling. And Gendry obviously cares about her a lot, and he's teasing her. She's like, oh, you look like a real lady. She's like, shut up. She's like, you even smell good. She's like, ah, boys are gross. And then they start fighting. Right. But I'm just like, there's definitely the way that fight is written. I'm like, I think that somebody's got a little crush on somebody else here.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Well, see, I was going to say it was almost like a John Arya moment. Part of it, the way that they were just, you know, messing around with each other. It was brotherly, you know, brother and sister kind of going at each other.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely, but that's why I say this is where I start shipping them, because I'm just like, maybe when she's older, like, 11. What if she goes off and does all of her crazy stuff and she comes back and she finds Gendry and they like get married and it's like,
they'll probably still be rowing that boat.
Robert would be so happy.
Yeah, right?
Can I just ask though, how awesome was this part of the chapter where Gendry starts talking about Thoros and how he came in, and, you know, basically Gendry had to work on all these different swords because Thoros kept setting his on fire. Right.
I mean, it worked.
Like, my master got so mad at him.
Not that we haven't heard this before, but Thoros and King Robert were like best buds.
Right.
And they used to go out drinking on the town with each other, getting shit faced.
Drinking contests.
Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of shit that's just so awesome. Going back to your point at the very beginning, when we started talking about this, about like how just free flowing and so much of a change it is from the other chapters that we've read, and you just get this awesome backstory. Like Thoros and King Robert, they used to kick it back in the day. Mm-hmm. Not even back in the day, like
not too long ago,
a couple books ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, I just like that.
It's the differences of people. I mean, we enter the world of Tyrion and the like, and in a lot of cases, these are highborn people with privilege and money, and they want for nothing. And you've got Lysa, who's essentially the same things going on with her, yet she has so many problems in her life, and it just goes to show, like, no matter how successful or wealthy someone can be, like, it really is truly an intrinsic state that you live in. And these people are rebels. They're on the run, you know, constantly dealing with death and destruction, dealing with the constant threat of people like the Brave Companions coming upon them. And still, you know, they're having better nights than any of the other people in the story. Mm-hmm. They're hanging out with Lady Smallwood, talking about the Kingslayer being exhausted in the bed. You know, like Arya's taking a bath. You got Gendry, and they're like playing outside, and they're singing songs, and they're drinking ale. It's just a difference of the kind of people they are. Like, they don't need all of the riches and the halls and the power to be happy. Like, they're just happy being with each other and doing what makes them feel good. So I think that's why it makes us feel good from reading it, because we're experiencing people that are truly content versus people that are just trying to get more.
And the fact that the two of them can just fight with each other, Gendry and Arya, and nothing serious comes of it, right? It's just fun at the end of the day, right? They come back and Harwin starts laughing up a storm because he looks at them. And it's like two kids who are out in the backyard. They were messing around and they got dirt all over them. And it takes it down a notch from what we're so used to reading. And, you know, Lady Smallwood is just this great person. Even at the end of the chapter, when she initially gives Arya, you know, her daughter's clothing, but then at the very, I think it says something that she gets her son's clothing at the end, right? Mm-hmm. Because we know Arya to be this tomboy type character, but there's this really great moment at the end of the chapter between her and Lady Smallwood, and you know, we learn that Lady Smallwood's son had died.
Yeah.
And Arya says that she's sorry, and that she she's even more sorry that she tore the acorn dress that she was wearing when she fought with Gendry, and she says something that's very un-Arya like in saying that the dress was pretty. And Lady Smallwood responds by saying, "Yes, child, and so are you. Mm. Be brave." And that, to me, that there's that moment that I think that Lady Smallwood knows there's more to Arya than meets the eye. Maybe she doesn't know exactly who she is, but I think there's just that true caring about a child who is in the midst of this war that's going on and wanting her to be safe.
Yeah. Uplifting. Be brave, yeah. Arya.
Be brave.
So I wish to the rest of you, be brave in your owns.
My Jamie own. Like, I feel like the obvious choice is to give it to Brienne because she rocks it. She rocks the whole chapter.
She rocks
but
it.
But I never do this. This is very out of character for me. But I think I'm going to give the own to Urswick because of the way he's like, Jamie's like, rides up next to him. He's like, hey, man, listen, I bet we could get you like a castle. Doesn't that sound nice? And the guy's like, he's like thinking about it, you know, for just a second. He's like, castles. Lord Urswick has a nice ring to it. My wife would have liked it, but it's too bad I killed her. Yep. And Jamie's like, yeah, and some gold. We could get you some good lands. And then Urswick just backhands him and doesn't even care. They're just riding. There's two men riding alongside each other on horses. And he like takes his hand off the reins and just slaps the dude to his left carelessly. And that's when Jamie starts to be afraid because he's like, this guy does not care about who I am. I have no power here. He's like King Théoden when he's still possessed by Saruman. And he like starts laughing. He's like, you have no power here. It's super scary. So Urswick kind of gets my badass own.
Wow. Own to Urswick.
Urswick.
I'm going to make mine easy. It goes to a rock.
Okay.
Ooh, yeah.
And I have an object. Wouldn't be a complete episode without one. I'm going to give my own to the fat Dothraki man for consuming so much stuff that he has a non-toned physique like all the other Dothraki that I've seen. You know,
fair enough.
You know what I'm saying? Like, he's been traveling the countryside and still found a way to engorge himself on the spoils of war. So good for you, buddy. You got across the narrow sea and now you're just living it up in like the non-desert lands. Good for you.
Yes. My own for Jamie chapter. You guys know I have a rule. I bring this up. I don't usually give owns to the point of view characters. I'm breaking that rule.
Again.
Wait, what do you mean again?
I'm pretty sure you've done this like in the last...
Yeah, he's been telling us every episode now.
I feel like, it's always like, here's my rule, but for the millionth time.
Okay, for the seventh, you want to hear why?
It's more of a theory than a rule at this point.
It's a theory, it's a preference. Okay, it's a preference. We're going to change it. From now on, it's going to be a preference. I think it's a little easy to give the point of view character an own because
you can't take
their head.
This back, Eric.
All right, well, I'm going to voice my preference as often as I've been voicing the rule, but now I won't feel so bad for breaking it. Look, Jaime Lannister has a list of all of the people that he knows that are stronger than him. And that is why I'm giving him an own. Here's a quote from the book. His longsword grew heavier with every blow, and Jaime knew he was not swinging it as quickly as he'd done earlier, nor raising it as high. Interior voice. She is stronger than I am. Book dialogue, or book description. The realization chilled him. Robert had been stronger than him, to be sure. The White Bull, Gerald Hightower, as well, in his heyday, and Sir Arthur Dayne. Amongst the living, Great John Umber was stronger. Strongbore of Crakehall, most likely. Both Cleganes, for a certainty. The mountain strength was nothing like human, da-da-da-da-da-da. And then he says, but not this woman, she's stronger than me. So, just in general, if he were fighting, say, a masked man, and he didn't know who it was, but that person was stronger than him. Like, he can rule people out. Like, he can identify a swordsman by their speed. And I just think that's a really awesome trait to have.
Yeah. Hmm.
Before you get into a fight, too, you should always know who can kick your ass. Like, it'll help you avoid losing battles. And I think it's a great tactic for Jaime to have. So that impressed me the most, is to basically know which guys in all of the Seven Kingdoms are stronger than you.
What about Arya?
Very nice.
The old woman, I think that much is obvious. Her connection to the high heart interests me. And I think she's pretty cool.
All right.
Not too bad.
That's a good one.
Yeah. I'm going to give mine to Arya. So I'm going to use Eric's rule.
Preference.
Eric's preference.
Remember this day in history, listeners.
Where Lady Smallwood says to her, "Are you fond of dancing, child? My Carolyn's a lovely dancer. She sings beautifully as well. What do you like to do?" Arya scuffed a toe amongst the rushes. "Needlework. Very restful, isn't it?" "Well," said Arya, "not the way I do it."
Only people who know what she calls her sword would laugh.
Yeah. Well, we all know about people that name their swords.
They're cunts.
Right? Do you give an own to the treetop city with rope ladders that descend on the right horn blow? Like, that's pretty darn cool, the village in the trees.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Do you give it to Lem, Anguy, and Tom and their fun conversations about the floppy fish? And so I've rolled these out in my mind. This is probably the hardest thing that I've had to do for the entire episode. But my own certainly has to go to Thoris of Myr for being a Red Priest and his history with Robert Baratheon, just at one point living it up. But more importantly, for what he did in this chapter, which was just a rumor. But he was essentially leading a herd of sheep along with their party. It's the wars going on, and he's herding sheep. And he's like, "Oh, I'm a priest, so I definitely know how to tend a flock." And he gives a few to Lady Smallwood, and they're eating some of it right there. So just the picture of Thoros of Myr, Beric Dondarrion, and some of the cooler guys, like the head dudes of the Brotherhood Without Banners, herding sheep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. For this next segment, we find ourselves Kateless.
Nicely done.
In Seattle.
Welcome. We're going to do owns.
Okay. On Twitter, Jared Kozal. Mr. Jared Kozal. Send us a note and says, "For Jaime 3, own goes to Sir Cleos' skull.
Ouch.
Turns out it wasn't as thick as Jaime thought it was. A teachable moment."
Hashtag wear helmet.
So that's a helmet PSA for you. And
that's
Jared,
good safety. You know, I'm really surprised that in all of the chapters that we've read so far that nobody rides on top of a horse with proper safety.
Not quite a helm or half helm, but like imagine just a bell, just what you could pick up at Walmart.
How cool would that be?
This is taking a turn for the worst.
Like. Jared Kozal, same dude, is Arion. His own goes to the growing legend of Beric Dondarrion. Reports of his death have been greatly exaggerated. Or have they?
Mm. Carry on, Beric Dondarrion. Carry on.
Carry on. Our wayward son.
If you're familiar with what we're reading, which is owns via Twitter, you may be familiar with our Twitter account. If you are familiar with our Twitter account, this week you may have been familiar with the fact that we tweeted, come on the show. We're going to call in, just like we did one time before, and you guys seemed to really like it. Well, guess what? We're about to add someone to the call right now. You ready, fellas?
Yeah.
Not really, but that's all right.
Hello?
Hello, who is this?
This is Ash.
Hey, Ash.
Hey, guys.
Welcome to Game of Owns. Kate's not here.
Boo.
Right.
She's so disappointed now. She's going to hang up on us.
Thank you so much for calling us. We were wondering, Ash, who we assume you listen to our show, if you would assist us in a segment that we do normally toward the latter pieces of the show, which is reading listener owns.
I would love to.
All right, some downtime. How are you?
I'm good. I'm actually rewatching season one right now.
Ooh. What episode are you watching?
I am on the pointy end, as we all know, ends very well.
Oh.
Very punny. Mike is here, too. He's just too bashful to say hello.
Mike is like this around new girls. He is. He'll take.
Also, Eric is a terrible wingman. Let me just add that in. horrible at it.
Ash, are you read along with Game of Thrones? Are you reading along with us?
I am indeed.
Wait, we're probably going to read one of her goddamn tweets.
Yep, the Lady Ash. There it is.
Next one we got here was from our good friend, Simon Amundsen, who looks a little bit like Eric's doppelganger in his...
Better looking, though. Sorry,
Eric. It's the shades, people. It's the shades. If I had sunglasses like that, man.
Yeah, that's true.
The world would be my oyster.
He says, own to the BCs, I guess the brave companions, for being such well-spoken gentlemen and being so very chivalrous towards Jaime and Brienne.
Mm-hmm.
Hashtag Urswick insolent lazy slap.
We got actually a compliment from our good buddy Simon Amundsen. Or Amundsen. He says, Zach's impression of Pycelle is too good.
You gotta stop studying it as an old man whose balls touch the floor.
You found my secret.
My lord. Tweet from Ram Dent, who says, own to Arya's frequent usage of the word stupid. quote, he tried to tickle her under the chin, but Arya slapped his stupid hand away.
Yes.
Just Tristan Lonnie was good to point out in replying to Ram that, yep, George definitely knows how to take you directly into a character's head. Arya uses stupid, the hound, bloody.
Nicole writes in, she says, Lady Smallwood is both kind-hearted and a woman who isn't impressed with Tom's rhyming abilities. I disagree, Nicole. I think she's very impressed by Tom's rhyming abilities. Then she goes on to say, give me the sword, oh I will. Double entendre much, wiggles eyebrows. Jamie is having the time of his life teasing poor Brienne. We're going to kick it to Ash now.
Lonnie writes in to say, in the Jamie chapter, my own goes to Brienne for fighting like such a badass. She gets Jamie to yield and admit to himself that she's stronger than he is. And in the Arya chapter, big own to Lady Smallwood, who manages to get Arya to wear two dresses, not one, but two, take two baths, and jokes about boning down with the Kingslayer. Awesome.
Here's another spelling error from Ramden. Jamie owned ukulele. There it is. Do you take me for a turncloak? Certainly. What else?
Nicole writes in. She says, I don't know if it was autocorrect or not, but I doubt Urslick would like being called a ukulele.
Danny, the D-man on Twitter says, for the Arya chapter, goes to the old woman who recalled Renly's death and foreshadowed a few others. And for Brienne, because her honor and naivete in this chapter reminded me of Ned a little bit. Look at that.
Interesting. We also got a few owns here from somebody named the Lady Ash.
Oh, that's
super cool. Like that we were able, because we put it out on Twitter, but such a active member of the community was able to hop in on the call. Very cool.
Well, you know, when you're an active member, you're stalking Twitter like nobody's business while watching Game of Thrones or Game of Thrones.
I liked your own for the Arya chapter in particular, because we were actually talking about earlier on in the show how this particular chapter itself is kind of a nice break from everything else that's going on in the series. So this very sophisticated individual, the Lady Ash, had the following to say about the Arya chapter, as we just mentioned. Arya and Gendry owned the series with an innocent free moment of play in the smithy, or smithy.
Smithy?
War is hard, but people still need to live.
Smithy. People do still need to live.
For the Jaime chapter, own goes to Brienne for her honor. Jaime may try to play the game to survive, but Brienne would rather face her demise than bend.
Ukulele. Our favorite person in the whole universe, Jeff Lightfoot, the social studies department chair from Illinois, if I'm correct, writes in and says, saw this while listening to the Goo podcast. I hear the wildling sauce is amazing. And it's a picture of Gilly's barbecue on a
Gilly's
truck trailer.
Gilly's barbecue.
So, yes. Yeah, I hear the wildling sauce is wonderful, Jeff. I hope that you got second and third helpings. Yes, see the photo on our Twitter.
Olson Doyle over on Twitter says, my own for Jamie 3 goes to the chapter itself for probably being my favorite one so far. All caps. It was so good.
You see the little helpful arrow he did, Eric, to link you to his next tweet?
Yeah. Yeah, hyphen, except hyphen Twitter delineates backwards. So he's actually leading into somebody else's. But anyway, Olson Doyle, my own for Arya, insert number here. I believe it was 3, goes to the Brotherhood Without Banners for being so much better in the book than in the show.
What do you think, Ash?
Yes, definitely. Well, I mean, is anybody going to argue that the show is better than the book?
Certain places, maybe. But
what a perfect opportunity to say, hey, Ash, read another own for us.
This own comes from Shelley Bagchi. For Jamie 3, I have to give it to Jamie for coming up with the story about the Sapphire Isles and saving Brienne from being raped. He does care.
We heard from Brienne of Tarth.
We did?
We did.
Which always makes it a great day, in my opinion, anyway.
I'd agree.
Because she wanted to play games with us. She said, time to play What If? With Game of Thrones. What if Tywin had been successful in marrying Cersei to Balin and or Theon? Hashtag discuss.
Ghost Snow says, Balon and Theon mysteriously end up dead with Jaime-sized stab wounds. Tywin crushes Iron Backlash.
Jaime-sized stab wounds.
Brienne says, I just want a Lannister reaction to Pike. This entire place smells like a privy. That was a terrible Brienne.
And Tracy Murray pointed out, Theon would still be just as castrated.
Yeah, oh, well, Eric. It's actually like that's a big deal. If you're unable to consummate the marriage, right? Everybody talks about it. Every wedding has a bedding.
That's true.
But it's a big deal. I guess the whole reason people get married is to, you know, continue a line. We did get some love from @BlackEyedLily, our friend Susan Stacy on Twitter, who said, "I love your unabashed enthusiasm over the chapters you're reading in this week's podcast."
Thank you.
I feel like that's good editing. It's like Zach cuts out the normal 5 minutes where we're like, "These chapters suck."
Thanks to everyone who sent in their owns on Twitter and Facebook. And now we turn to the longer formatted means of sending us your owns, which is email. Though I guess technically, right, you could have it shorter than 140 characters.
I like to keep my emails under 40 characters. If I can.
Yes, it's true. Your email carrier would be very upset with you, though, that he had to go all right around in the snow carrying your letter.
When you could have just tweeted it.
When you could have just.
Yeah.
But anyway, Ash, why don't you do us the honors of reading the first email?
All right. Our first email comes from Nicholas, who says, "My own for Jamie goes to Brienne for truly earning Jamie's respect the only way she can, through prowess in combat. Putting her strength in the same thought as people like Great John or the Clegane's is both humbling and astonishing."
Yeah.
She's so cool. That was me, not Athena. "The fight is what really cements their relationship moving forward. For Arya, my own goes to Lady Smallwood for both standing her ground no matter who knock on the door, and for making Arya wear one last fancy dress. Except the Mordaines would be proud. Nick Hartley does not so."
Which I think is like a typical email signature, like this actual established email signature, right?
Yeah, every time he writes in,
Nick Hartley does not so.
Keep it up,
that
Nick.
That was awesome. Completely agree there. And I guess I didn't realize when I was reading it that will, in fact, be Arya's like last dress ever.
Maybe.
It's all trousers from here on out.
Nothing but trousers and leather jerkins for me, boys. Here's an email. It's from Timothy Mulligan. He says, "My own for the next Arya chapter goes to GRM's epic foreshadowing. The Unsullied should write down the ghost of High Heart's dreams and keep them in mind while watching the next season of Game of Thrones, or while reading the next book, since the story is so different now. And I don't know if all these things will still happen in the show. Neither do we, Tim."
And the final email comes from Erica, who says, "For the Jaime chapter, my own goes to Brienne of Tarth, of course."
Of course.
Of course.
Of course.
Who else would you give it to?
It's a horse.
I mean, it's Brienne. "I gave her my own for giving Jaime a run for his money during the sword fight. I believe she now has a little more respect from him because of it. For the Arya chapter, the Lady of the Leaves got my own because she lives in the most badass tree house,
yes,
tree community ever. Who wouldn't want to go live there? Stay awesome, Erica."
You stay awesome. That was good on.
That, like, a whole situation reminds me of, do you guys ever play Myst? The tree community in Myst.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you have to take the lever and the pulley and the elevator up and the, it's, I've always wanted to, or like in Kashyyyk.
It reminds me of Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you would like to contact us, right? The way Tim, Nick, and Erica did, you can just type into your email tofield@gameofowns.com.
The two field.
Not the from field. That's from you guys. And plus, it'd be weird to see us getting emails from ourselves.
I do that sometimes.
Which does happen.
Just to keep these guys on their feet.
Thank you for coming and for listening and for being so nice and for staying in touch with us and all the people that listen to our show. I mean, what could we say? We don't have any golds or gemstones to give you, so we'll just keep making the show.
And I'm calling you on Patreon, so hey!
Hey!
Did you like chapter two?
I did. The images on the screen really caught me off guard, because I was doing dishes, and I like looked over, and I'm like, did yellow leather just flash across the screen?
Wow.
And then there it was, and it was pretty awesome. My favorite, I think I just really started cracking up when you did the beer.
Well, we hope that you enjoyed Eric's beer review, and when you leave us tonight, we hope that you watch it on repeat for like the next 6 years.
Thank you, Ash, for all of your support and supporting us over on Patreon.
Oh yeah, of course. Thank you guys for just doing your thing. Like, it was awesome.
And until next time, my new friend, au revoir.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
All right, bye guys.
See Thank you.
That was fun.
That was fun.
Well, I guess this is a really convenient way for us to say visit patreon.com/goo. because of what she
You've
said.
You've heard another happy, That's satisfied what she said. Person.
Well, one other way that you can get in touch with the show is on iTunes, and it is the month of November, so nothing less than 5 stars is acceptable. We just ask that you head on over to iTunes and leave a nice rate and review, 5 stars, as was just mentioned. And we do have one here that I'd like to read. There are quite a few here, actually, but from Seth Knight, GOT fan. Really enjoy the chapter-by-chapter review of the Game of Thrones books. I've read the books before, but I'm reading them again and getting more out of them with the podcast. I would recommend this podcast to any Game of Thrones fans.
Also, if you've been keeping tabs on what we've been up to this week, you may have noticed on our Facebook and Instagram pages that a classic caption contest has been resurrected from the ashes and exists now in the real world. It was Anguy and Arya, and let's just say that some of your replies and responses were pretty darn hilarious.
In this photo, Anguy is leaning in. Arya's got a bow, and she's not afraid to use it, but it's just kind of down by her side, and they're outdoors. What is Anguy saying to her? How is she taking the news? You guys wrote in with your submissions, and here we go. Game of Owns submitted one.
That was me.
I think it's got the most likes out of any of these. If it ain't, yeah, so you gotta go. The caption is, quote, "I totally ship you and Gendry." End quote. Okay. Bad. Nathan Schreiber submitted, quote, "I don't know where Lady Stoneheart is either."
Me either,
Nathan. I don't even know who that is. Marianne Schwellinger says, that's my favorite, quote, "Great. You just shot Bambi's mother. Now we'll have to put up with a baby deer following us, crying, mother!"
Wow. Sad. Still never seen it.
Sad, sad, sad. Zach Schaff. This is a quote for Anguy. It's one word. Moist.
Sorry to everyone listening that hates that word.
A lot of people dislike that word.
I know. I love moist cake. I'm just throwing
this
that
is
out
a great, a solid entry by Jeff Lightfoot. Brownies. This is Anguy giving Arya some arrow advice. Shoot the pointy end into the target.
Yeah.
Shoot him with the pointy end.
See, he's teaching. He's still even teaching now. Even in his caption contest quote, he's teaching Arya.
That's true. A teacher does not fall far from the Facebook posts of the teacher.
On that note, Murph Man on Instagram says, Tywin Lannister isn't the only one who shits gold, you know. Dang. 3692 says, aim small, miss small. You see, that was good.
Oh, I like that one.
That one. And here's one that's sort of like the one that I wrote, but a little bit more. You decide. It says, your friend Gendry, ... You hit that yet?
Yeah.
Wow.
People just being open about their sex lives, right? You hit that? I hit that.
They do have no banners. This one's great from Jay Ponster. He says, are you going to shoot him or not?
Sometimes you just got to, like, don't overthink it. Just go for the name joke. Back on Facebook, Rashni Bambwani says, psst, Arya, I think your breeches are unlaced.
That actually is probably the most accurate. That's the look on his face.
Yeah, she was in and out of clothes a lot this chapter, so she probably just forgot to, you know, lace them up.
We saved the best for last. And there's plenty more. You can read them on our Instagram and Facebook pages. From Elkitter, best for last, Hodor.
Yeah. Well done, well done.
There. Gosh, I'm not used to having like a trump card, like the quote Hodor, to like just play at a caption contest. In fact, that should be the new rule that is actually banned from captions.
No way. That's the
I'm banning Hodor from all the games.
I see this is becoming though something fun that we can do. Maybe not every week, but we can certainly include in on the show. Our listeners are very creative. We know that from all the owns that they send in, but they seem to be pretty good at captioning photos as well.
Do what good people do and stay in touch with us through our pages all over the internet. It's pretty much / Game of Owns
everywhere.
So how do we do this? How do we end the show without Kate? I mean, we've had another listener on that hopefully you guys enjoyed hearing, and I know that we enjoyed speaking to. Like, what do we do now?
We get ready, because we don't have too much time before we have to start reading again. We have Bran and John on the horizon, and hopefully they're as good at the chapters as we just read. Because quite honestly, I mean, two very different chapters, obviously, in Jaime and Arya. One was quite enjoyable, the other not so much. Can I just ask a question here as we wrap up the show? Can you feel sort of the tone of the book and even the series really starting to change? And I know We've been through a lot, obviously, with the Clash of Kings and what happened at the end of Game of Thrones, but the entire series as a whole now is starting to move more into that dark area.
Yeah.
It's exciting. I'm looking forward to how this book develops, and I'm looking forward to sharing it with you guys.
Seconded.
Thirdsies.
It'll be fun.
Thirdsies.
Make sure to join us next week, and to say hello in between then. We'll be around.
Unless I catch the next train.
I like
out
that
of here.
Ending.